Support for this show comes from Sylvan Learning. When children love learning, they can tackle any challenge life throws at them. Sylvan's Insight Assessment can help you determine if your child is ready for what's ahead. It can also identify gaps in learning and point out areas that could be of concern for your child so they can tackle what's to come. And right now, it's the best price of the year at $29. Go to sylvan29.com to learn more and get your child's assessment for only $29. That's sylvan29.com.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to episode 93 of the Talking Chop podcast. I'm your host, Brad Roland, and joining me, as I guess usual or semi-usual, the great Eric Cole. What's up, man?
Hey, man, how are you?
I'm okay. We were talking before we started recording. I'm not in the clearest state of mind. I just had to drive to Florida and back in a couple of days, and my seven-hour return trip took about 10 and a half.
That's code for Brad has been drinking, everybody.
I don't drink, too. That's the thing. Like, it's one of those nights where it would be nice if I did, kind of thing.
Right.
Might be time to unwind a little bit. But shouts to Eric for being awake on a late hour on Sunday as we can record this, because we're already late, as people, I'm sure, have pointed out. It's kind of funny. Last week on the podcast, we talked extensively about how we were not going to do an emergency podcast. And then I got approximately 38 questions of asking whether I was going to do an emergency podcast. So sorry, guys.
Well, fortunately, I mean, we got our podcast, you know, the Road to Atlanta podcast. We got that up pretty quickly. Oddly enough, like, even though, like, you were, like, literally probably going to be up in about 3 hours that night, he's like, so, I mean, I do have a window at 11 p.m., and I'm like, we're going to record ours. You get some sleep, and we'll figure it out next week. But
yeah, it was one of those nights where it wasn't going to happen for me. I was glad you guys did it. So if you guys missed that podcast, please go subscribe to Road to Atlanta and listen to that podcast every time it goes up, to be sure. But here we are for a non-emergency podcast talking about mostly what happened at the beginning of the week. Although it seems like a lifetime ago now. I mean, maybe that's just me and my whirlwind holiday, but feels like it's been a month, and it's only been five days.
I'm just glad it's over.
Like, same.
It just seemed like every day it would be like, is this going to be the day? And then we're going to be like, well, we're going to push it to next week, or, oh, well, they're going to talk to someone else, or, well, they're pushing the announcement until tomorrow. And I'm just like, can this just be over at this point? And obviously the announcement was really bad, and it just kept piling on over the course of the day. And, you know, now that I'm kind of, you know, we're on the other side of it where we can kind of, you know, at least see what things look like now. I mean, I'm not sure if I feel better about it, but I'm glad that it's not like this, like, mysterious thing that's hanging over the franchise. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's the best way to put it, I would say, is just we know what it is. I think some of the reason, other than people just not listening, that they were asking if I was going to do the emergency podcast was that it was more than most people thought it was going to be. I will say, you know, I had heard, and I think I said this on the podcast even, that I had heard it could be six or seven guys. This was more than six or seven guys, so I understand that. It was, so I guess, I don't know, was your first reaction, that's more than I thought, or was it just about what you thought it was going to be by the end? I know it sort of slowly trickled out, so we kind of knew before we knew, if that makes sense.
Right. So I think this is an interesting way in which Major League Baseball worded all of this, right? Because ostensibly the reason why basically the entirety of the 2016 class was invalidated was from violations from the 2015 season, right? And those would be guys like Christian Pache, Darian Cruz, you know, guys we've grown to, well, at the very least in the case of Pache, these are guys we've really grown to like and we don't want to lose. Now, however, the entirety of the reporting over this for like the last, what, couple months has been whether or not the Braves, you know, had verbal handshake agreements beforehand with Kevin Maitan, whether or not money changed hands, and whether or not there was bundling that happened during that 2016, that 2016 season because the signing bonuses weren't lining up with the talent that they were getting back and all this other stuff, like the ones that were at least publicly proclaimed. I think that the way Major League Baseball did this is twofold. One, I think that Major League Baseball understands that there's no way that they're going to be able to police those pre-July 2nd verbal handshake agreements. They're just not going to be able to do it. It would become a nightmare with basically every team in the league getting punished for it because every team is legal. Every team is guilty of it. What they are trying to crack down on, and that's what they got with the Dodgers, is the idea of bundling, trying to a team bundling signing certain players so that way that they can ultimately get all the money to a particular player that they want while not going over any caps or anything like that. And I think that's what they were ultimately deciding. You know what, the Braves were so brazen in their signings in the international market over the last several years that the only way we can do this without causing a riot amongst all of our ownership and with all these other teams, because ultimately everyone's guilty of a lot of these crimes, is by saying, look, this is the one thing we're going to focus on, which is, you know, the amount of, like, going over the cap. And by saying that they would, because of the extra money that was, you know, because of the bundling and because of the extra benefits to certain players, they would have been in the penalty for the 2016 season, we're just going to go ahead and declare all these guys free agents. And, you know, that's certainly a way to do it.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, and it prevents a lot of appeals from the Braves, right? Because, you know, while the Braves would have an appeal saying, you know what, this seems like selective enforcement, et cetera, because everyone breaks these rules, they're focusing on one specific rule, but just to kind of make that case clear and really nailing the Braves for it, losing 13 players, severe signing restrictions for two seasons, which I think is the worst part of the whole thing, and then a couple other, you know, guys like, you know, Bay getting, you know, sent to free agency because of a separate issue, and not being able to sign Poussin because they had already apparently signed him to already had an agreement in place for him, and they're just not going to allow him to sign him. None of it is good. I would say that if I was ranking the things that I cared about the most, it would be that the 2 years of really severe signing restrictions, and then the losing of the prospects, and then the, you know, losing the third round pick kind of stinks. But, you know, beyond that, you know, those are the two things that matter the most. The signing restrictions being the biggest part.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because I think obviously the headliner is loss of prospects, and especially with Maiton, like he's the one guy that basically, you know, even casual fans know. But, you know, beyond that, and I want to talk about those guys too. But let's talk about the bonus thing now, because I think that's something that I heard from you guys, and I trust your opinion, and that seems like it was definitely overlooked a little bit, which makes sense because there's not a face to that. But I guess, I don't know, talk about what you think of that and how much it hamstrings the Braves moving forward, because that's always the question that we get is, you know, how much is this going to ruin the Braves moving forward? And on one hand, it could have been worse, and on the other, that's just actually going to sting pretty bad.
That's going to hurt for a while, and it's going to put a lot of pressure on the draft, like on the draft scouting side of things, and, you know, and may allow them or force them to make trades they normally wouldn't make, if that makes any sense. Because let's be clear, the loss of all these prospects, including Kevin Maiton, a guy who, while the scouting reports in his from his first year in the pros weren't good, I mean, he's still a guy that we liked a lot. And there was a lot of these guys like Junior Severino really liked a lot, and just, you know, Levant and Soto. I mean, Garrett's heartbroken over losing him. Jeffrey Del Rosario, Juan Contreras, these are all guys we liked a lot. And those are the system is obviously worse from losing these guys. But I don't think that, like, even if maybe the Braves just knocks them out of having the top farm system because they were already kind of close with the White Sox, you know, and they lose some of that depth in the lower minors. You know, but there's still like a top three season farm system in baseball. The problem is that a lot of this depth in the next year and a half or so is going to be graduating, you know, with, you know, the expected, anyway, graduations of guys like Ronald Acuna, Mike Soroka, Colby Allard, Max Fried. All these guys are going to be graduating, you know, and with guys like Colby Allard, I mean, not just Colby Allard, but, you know, Austin Riley, all these guys are right there. I mean, they're all in double A or higher. And in the lower minors, Rome was certainly still a stacked team, still had plenty of talent on it, but you basically lost most of your rookie league roster other than the 2017 draftees. You know what I mean? And it's hard to replenish that So what happened, it's hard enough to replenish that because you lose that many guys, right? But the Braves were already in the penalty for next signings period because they overspent their pool when they were signing Kevin Maiton and all these other guys. Not only did they not get any of those guys, but they also can't sign anybody realistically for over $300,000 for next signing period. And then the period after that is when it gets really bad because they've had their entirety of their bonus pool taken from them, which means they cannot sign anyone for more than $10,000 during that signing period, which basically means they don't get to sign anybody.
That's the thing. I mean, I think people are always sort of glossing over that, but that's basically what that means. They can't get anybody.
Yeah, it's really bad. You know, and then the following year, they have their bonus pool cut in half. All of these things are brutal, and it compounds the problem the Braves are going to find themselves in, is that there's not going to be as much talent filtering up from the rookie ball. Because, I mean, all these guys are lottery tickets. Let's make no mistake about it. When you're signing 16-year-old kids, you know, you can see real talent there, but, you know, guys can get to the States and either, you know, don't know how to act in public, or, you know, they mature in weird ways, or, you know, their bodies change and it alters their swings. It alters how they pitch. It, you know, some guys you don't think are going to be anything end up being able to throw 98 because they're teenagers, and all of a sudden they become adults and they're entirely different people. It's just what happens. But you want as many of those lottery tickets in your system as you can. And what the Braves had done over the past is focused on with the draft, focus on pitching and getting all their position players from the international market. And the international market, in addition to the 2016 signing period, not going to be able to bear basically any fruit simply because all those guys are gone, or at least most of them. But the next three signing periods, it's going to be incredibly difficult to get anything out of, anything at all, which means that does this change what the Braves have to do in the draft or how they acquire young assets in terms of how they're trading for guys? I mean, I don't really know, but the signing period stuff is what's going to be the biggest problem. And there's also just questions I have because, like, for example, not this next year but the year after, when they have their entirety of their pool taken from them, I have no idea if they can – I know they can't trade away international bonus pool money.
Well, if they can trade for it.
Mm. Yeah, if they can acquire it. Yeah. I have no idea. It's a stated thing that they can't sign. I'm pretty sure it's a stated thing that they won't be able to sign a player for more than $10,000, which is pretty prohibitive. But if you can trade for slot money, I mean, I don't know. I know there are a lot of guys that get signed for that amount, so maybe the Braves just try to go wide and try to get a bunch of those guys in and see what happens. But I don't even know that's something that's possible right now. And, you know, there's also this lingering possibility, and I don't want to get anyone's hopes up. It is theoretically possible, I will say that some of these prospects sign back with the Braves, although I would highly doubt it. And they won't be able to do so until May. So there's a lot of reasons why that won't happen, but it's a possibility.
Yeah. I don't know. It's kind of scary in some ways. I mean, obviously there are other ways to build a roster and keep the existing farm system is still good. So it's not like they're going to be barren. But yeah, it's not prohibitive. It's just, it's tough to, sort of brush under the rug because I mean, I've seen arguments made, you know, reasonably that it could have been worse and that, you know, it might seem worse than it is, but, you know, it's bad. There's no way around it being bad.
No, it's not good.
Yeah.
And I mean, there's a couple of things that I expect to happen. Like, I expect Anthopoulos to really target comp round picks in trades. And I would hope that given the fact that the Braves aren't going to be spending money on the international market, that maybe possibly during this 2018 free agency period where all these good players are going to be floating around, that maybe, you know, Liberty Media loosens the purse strings a little bit and we can start going and get some guys. Because if you can sign some guys, you know, who are still in their prime and, you know, we still have a really good young crop of players in the minor leagues right now that may be able to buy you the time you need to get out of this penalty phase where you can kind of continue to make this a sustainable thing, assuming that your drafts go well.
Yeah, I mean, there are ways to go around. I mean, you have to assume that Anthopoulos had some level of idea what was coming. I mean, not specifically, but like I think he was probably preparing for what he thought it might have been. It could have been worse than that, of course, but I don't know. There's probably going to be.
I would agree with that. Yeah,
there's a plan in place. I'm sure it doesn't mean it's going to be easy, but there's certainly going to be a plan in place, and we'll see what happens from there. Just by the way, I think it's important. I know, you know, Road to Atlanta listeners will be more clued in on all of the guys who were lost here, and there are 13 of them. Sort of a straw poll that I took sort of on purpose from some of my friends that are not, I wouldn't say diehard, you know, reading Talking Chop every day kind of Braves fans, more like, you know, the Braves are my favorite baseball team kind of fans. And the only guy that they had heard of or even come close to hearing of was Kevin Maiton, which is sort of, I want to point out when people sort of forget how little most fans actually not necessarily care about these kind of prospects, but are just unaware of them, I guess is the best way to put it. So just quickly for our purposes here, on those people that may not be super dialed in, Maiton is the biggest name, but you know, any other guys that you want to quickly mention as to like how big of an impact that losing them could have on the Braves, just because I think that's while it's probably the only time, only part of this that people are really focusing on, I think it's also one that's kind of easy to brush off if you don't recognize the names.
Obviously, Kevin Maiton is the guy that got the most billing. He was a shortstop prospect. Some people think he was going to be destined for a third base. You know, switch hitting has real raw power, has real promise for the ability to hit. Was probably one of the better, in terms of like hype and in terms of, you know, overall talent level, international signings of the last 10 years. And, you know, he could end up being really good somewhere, but the scouting reports on his rookie year weren't particularly good. He said he got too big and that, you know, his swing was all messed up. Abraham Gutierrez was a catching prospect that had a lot of promise. Whether or not his bat was ever going to play was remained to be seen, but he could, we saw him down in Florida and he really could catch, and he definitely is a strong kid. Yunior Severino is probably one of the kids we like the most down there. And he, you know, has real power, real pop. He played second base. Whether or not he was going to end up, it was almost like it was a possibility he was going to be stuck without a position because he wasn't a particularly good second baseman, but he just had a real feel for hitting. So that remains to be determined. Two pitchers that we really liked a lot were Juan Contreras, who has really live stuff, but still has lacked the ability to throw strikes. And Yefrey Del Rosario, who had, you know, really, I think, a really good fastball and, you know, a hammer curveball when he was controlling it, but was, again, still kind of learning the craft. There were several other guys with some promise, and, you know, especially like the Jaijuan Bays, but we hadn't really gotten much information on him yet, and he hadn't, that contract never even got to the approval phase yet. So you can find things alike with a lot of these guys, but those are kind of the big names I would mention.
Yeah, and by the way, I mean, just to sort of drive home the point about what we were making before about, you know, only having $10,000 per guy to sign. If you look at the list of the guys that the Braves lost, basically all of them were million-dollar players. So, like, in terms of signing bonuses.
And there were guys that we had never heard of, which, between the four of us, that's a difficult task.
That we're going to get $1 million.
They all made over $300,000 plus.
Right,
all,
which is wild.
So
I think just to drive home, I know people will think this is obvious, and you know, to you and I, it would be as well. But not being able to spend real money is going to kill them, for those couple of years in that particular market, it's just like they're not going to be able to sign anybody, which is what it is. But because as you kind of mentioned, though, there are guys on this list that I didn't know the Braves.
Especially that middle year, yeah. The middle year is going to be the brutal one. Getting your pool cut in half really stinks, but you can at least make a play for a guy or two. And you know, the next year where we're in the penalty and you can only sign guys for $300,000, it's theoretically possible you can get something worth for your money there. But you know, the 2019-2020 signing period is going to be really bad.
Yep, and we don't want to keep going down that road, but I think it's just important to sort of break down all this stuff in the way that happened. I know we're late on it, but you know, on the bright side-ish, not too much has happened since then, so people have been able to sort of read. I would hope people have read our stuff about it.
I am genuinely shocked that AA hasn't made a trade yet.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's...
Like, I mean, there was the moves right before the 40 man deadline, but you know, like in terms of like, you know, like just making some noise. Just
look over here; it's the typical misdirection. It did not happen.
Plus, he likes to make trades. Just
well, yeah, it's easier in baseball to make a deal like that, because even if it's not, you can make a trade that's noticeable without it actually being huge for your future. Like you can just kind of make the deal that's like, hey guys, we did something. Look over here. Check this out.
Right.
I mean, real quickly, we should talk about the 40-man roster stuff, because the Braves did make some moves. In fact, Thopless went out and got a couple of guys from the Dodgers, which I'm sure he's very familiar with. Josh Ravine, I believe it is.
Raven, Ravine, one of those. Two, yeah.
Right-handed pitcher the Braves actually traded for cash considerations, and then they also claimed a left-hander named Grant Dayton off waivers from the Dodgers. So both those guys, obviously, Anthopoulos will be very familiar with, and the Braves also picked up the contracts and put them on the 40-man roster for Ricardo Sanchez and Adam McCreary, which one of those I know you didn't love, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I can voice my thoughts just on the 40-man stuff first. I didn't think that Adam McCreary had any risk of being picked in the Rule 5 draft. Now, I might just be wrong about that, but you know, he's certainly not a bad relief prospect. I just think that there are guys that are more likely to be picked than him. Just generally speaking, and for those roster spots. Now, that, I may just be wrong about that, and I was pretty convinced that the Braves were going to add Dustin Peterson and Travis DeMeritt, but it's very possible that the Braves kind of did a survey around the league, and it was pretty much determined that there was no risk that they were going to be taking at all. And J.J. Cooper from Baseball America and the like seemed to agree that those guys aren't going to be picked, which makes Scott Coleman make a sad face because his boy Dustin Peterson isn't going to be picked by anybody in the Rule 5 draft.
Yes, the sadness will be.
Yes, you know, it's kind of that's a pretty brutal coming to. Dustin was dealing with an injury this year, so I'm not willing to completely write him off yet. But I've never been exactly super excited about him either. And Travis DeMeritt certainly has his faults. But again, I was just a little surprised that those guys weren't added to the roster because we had slots available. But this gives the Braves some more bullpen depth. Now at the same time. You know, Grant Dayton is a guy that has a lengthy arm injury history, and then you have Josh Ravine, who has a lengthy PED suspension on his record, and some questionable track record in terms of success in the minor leagues as well as in the majors. You know, with one good year and one not so good year. So, I mean, I'm fine with these sorts of acquisitions because they're just kind of just try them out and see how it works, and if it doesn't, then you just try to find someone else. But it's nice to see that the Braves are at least making a concerted effort to try to make the bullpen a priority and, get some more help in there, because right now the number of good pitchers is greatly outnumbered by the ones that are not particularly good. So we'll see. We'll see. Ricardo Sanchez, I think, just as the 40-man deadline approached, it seemed like he was kind of a consensus. He was going to get added. He's still really – even though he's been in the system long enough to be a Rule 5 draft, he's still actually really young. And has some significant promise. This next year, if he has a good year and can actually get into Double A and Triple A, that would be great for him. But if he can't really prosper more than he has, then I highly doubt that he's going to be lasting on that Braves 40-man roster for longer past this year.
Yeah, I mean, not too much to add to that. I just think this is stuff that's very subtle and as a result doesn't get a whole lot of coverage. But I think, as you kind of mentioned, that the guys who were not out of the 40-man probably got more attention than the guys who were, which makes sense. I mean, those guys are a little bit more famous, and Peterson, DeMeritt especially. But, nothing crazy enough in there to where it was like a landmark occasion. Just something that the Braves had to do something. They did a couple of things, No huge thoughts on that. Just wanted to at least hit on it. But I forgot to mention this, and we have to talk about it at least for a second. Let's talk about Coppy's lifetime ban, because that was the, I don't want to say as the headliner, but it was certainly, that was the biggest surprise for me on all of it. Not that he would have serious trouble, because we kind of all figured he was going to have some serious individual trouble there, but a lifetime ban is another thing altogether. Where are you at with that? Because I actually don't know. We have
look, we're kind of all in uncharted waters in terms of like what these punishments should or should not be, especially since what I think the Braves got punished for is drastically different than what they were guilty of, and I've already kind of made my thoughts on that. I think what happened is that Coppy lied to Major League Baseball multiple times. And that is a really good way to make whatever commissioner or whoever's in charge of discipline really upset. Especially, a certain amount of contrition or something like that goes a long way. And, articles I've read said, there are multiple times where he changed his stories or flat out did not tell the truth. And, again, if you read the language of Major League Baseball's investigation and kind of what their conclusions are, Coppy just it's like the first paragraph is just generally the personnel responsible for these violations are no longer with the Braves. we are confident that the Braves won't do that again. And then, like, it's like two sentences, like, John Coppola, you don't get to play in baseball, you don't get to do anything in baseball ever again. And there's no real explanation as to, like, kind of what is uniquely different that he did versus Gordon Blakely, or what was so particularly egregious that they put him on, like, the Pete Rose list. You know, it's pretty bad to ban a guy for life. I was expecting, like, a 5-year ban or something like that, where, you know, he was just gonna, it was gonna take him a while to get a chance to work in baseball again. A lifetime ban is no joke, and I'm frankly, I mean, I'm surprised at the length of it. That's for sure. Yeah. Gordon Blakely getting a year long ban doesn't surprise me.
Agreed.
It's kind of like,
I just the lifetime ban thing is weird for a number of reasons. I understand. I mean, somebody actually asked this to me. I didn't really have an answer for it, but you know, it's kind of the one thing that they can do to somebody. Like, the 1-year ban makes sense, but like, were you gonna give Copy a 10-year ban? Like, that's kind of a, I mean, it's sort of a weird thing where like, it kind of sounds reasonable to me to give a guy a 1-year ban or even like a 3-year, 5-year ban, but like, is there a 20-year baseball ban? Because like, that isn't, that's just a lifetime ban basically. Like, if you tell a guy he can't work in a league for 10 years, that's basically a lifetime ban, because like, is he gonna come back in the league after 10 years? Probably not. I don't know. It's just a weird, like, if it sounds super severe, and it obviously is super severe, it got me thinking, like, yeah, it's kind of a good point. Like, I don't, maybe I'm wrong and maybe I just don't know, but have they ever given anybody a ban that was more than a couple of years long, like, for any reason? I just think it's like, all right, it's either going to be 3 years or a lifetime. It's like, the guy's 39 years old. Like, lifetime is a long time.
Yeah, and I guess I wouldn't understand the difference between an offense that was punishable by 10 years versus punishable by life.
That's my
thing. What is the difference? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, that's a reason. I mean, and it's not like there isn't a situation where Coppola can't apply for reinstatement. I mean, Pete Rose has been doing that forever. And, you know, it's very possible that they'll say no over and over again. But, I mean, Rob Manfred and Major League Baseball are very serious when they say that there are certain things in the international market. It doesn't seem like there's going to be all of them, but there are certain things in the international market that they are not going to tolerate at all. And, you know, one of them is, you know, bundling to try to get more money to overspend the cap, and the other one is lying to them about it. And it sounds like Copy did a lot of both. So,
yeah, no, I mean, I was, listen, I think you and I were expecting a fairly severe punishment for John Coppola. So, it wasn't as if him being outed by name was any going to be a big surprise, but lifetime ban was not in my projection, I will say, just because...
I am with you there.
He's the fourth person, the fourth active person to be on the lifetime ban list. And
let's see, Pete Rose.
Yelmer Mejia.
From the Mets.
And I believe the guy from the Cardinals, the hacker.
Did he get a lifetime ban?
Yeah, that's what I didn't know that, but I read that in a few different things this week, talking about the people that were actually on the list.
Very possible. And then there's, you know, the shoeless Joe Jackson.
Yeah, and then obviously he's no longer with us, so that didn't necessarily matter anymore. But yeah, that's the people that are alive and banned. There are now 4 of them from everything that I've read this week. One of them is John Coppola, who happens to be 39 years old. So. Copy's very smart and qualified. He'll get another job doing something. But it's just it's a very weird thing to just think about a guy being lifetime banned at 39.
And it was a very sad day overall. Just they kept piling on, and then you're just like the weight of it. You realize, you know, this is gonna be something that alters the franchise for the next decade. Now, it doesn't ruin it.
No,
it does not do that, because the farm system's too good right now. There's too much money coming in. The Braves have the ability to be fine, but this makes things harder, and it's something that will be felt for a long time, to be sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we get out of here, man, we don't need to go super long on this fine podcast, but I do want to talk about the Hall of Fame ballot a little bit.
Yeah.
I think we know Chipper's going to get in the Hall of Fame, at least.
He made a lot of people mad with his tweets.
Yes.
I didn't realize how widespread this was.
That was where I was going. I didn't realize that either. I never thought he was going to be unanimous anyway. There was some buzz that he could be close, but for whatever reason, nobody can be unanimous. For, you know, Greg Maddux wasn't unanimous. That's kind of the end. That's kind of the last one for me. It's like, all right, this is never going to happen. No one's ever going to be unanimous. But yeah, Chipper apparently has angered some folks. Which, I listen, the tweets that were referenced, they're not good. There's no way around that at all. I think Chipper's going to get in, but it won't be by the margin that I originally thought in reading some of that stuff. And, of course, Andrew's on the ballot as well. My thoughts on Andrew are well documented. I think Andrew should be in the Hall of Fame, but I don't think he's going to get in anytime soon. He might get in near the end, potentially. It might be the Tim Raines thing where you have to have so many people yelling about him for so long that he finally gets in, that kind of thing.
Yeah, he gets the Jonah Carey treatment. Correct. The Jonah Carey, Ryan Spader treatment.
I will sign up to be Andrew Jones, Jonah Carey. I'm just not as famous as Jonah Carey is, so that's unfortunate for Andrew.
Just help Jonah and Ryan get Edgar Martinez and, Larry Walker and those guys in. And then Andrew's the kind of guy that they would love.
I will go on an international tour representing Andrew Jones in the way that Jonah did for Tim Raines. And by the way, Tim Raines should have been in a long time ago. It's not as if Jonah did anything crazy, because Tim Raines should have been in for sure. But so should Andrew Jones, by the way. Like, it's kind of hilarious, and we don't have to do too much on it. But it was look at some of the guys who were basically just glove only Hall of Famers, like Ozzie Smith. People are starting to. I don't think Omar Vizquel is going to get in, but there's people that think he's going to get in or should get in. And to think that Vizquel should get in before Andrew Jones is hilarious, because Vizquel, was a great defender. Andrew Jones is a great defender who also has 400 plus home runs, and was an MVP candidate with his bat. He had 50 home runs in a season, There's these guys who are glove only, which I'm actually okay with if you have enough value. I think if Andrelton Simmons has been what he's been for a while now, if he can do that for 10 more years, he should be in the Hall of Fame. But Andrelton Simmons is not approaching the hitter Andrew Jones was at any point. This is his breakout year for Andrelton, but people just forget how good Andrew was as a hitter, because he always hit 250 or whatever. But if you have that kind of power and that kind of glove, yeah, I'm getting mad all over again. But Andrew Jones should be in the Hall of Fame. That's where I am.
And I think he's going to get a decent amount of love this year.
I hope so.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of agenda candidates, as it were. There's a lot of people who are pushing for Edgar Martinez, rightfully so. There's the Larry Walker debate. There's a lot of these pet cause candidates.
And there's also the ten person rule and all the PED guys who you can argue about forever. If you don't care about PEDs,
there's Bonds and Clemens versus no Bonds and Clemens. I mean, Vlad Guerrero didn't get in last year, which doesn't make any sense to me either.
If you don't care about PEDs, good luck only having 10. There are more than 10 people that are worthy of Hall of Fame induction right now that are not going to be able to get it. And I think it's Keith Moss, probably the most famous person that's been talked about that. But there's some guys who would vote for 15 candidates and they can't. And Andrew's going to be probably in that list of that bottom five for a lot of people that they
would like to vote for. Yeah, that 11 to 15. Yep, he's gonna have to wait for a weaker class, unfortunately. This is a pretty tough ballot, and I don't know if there's a lot of guys falling off this one. If I'm kind of thinking about it, with the Chipper stuff, by all the numbers, he's gonna get in the Hall, and he will get voted in. But that said, for future Hall of Fame candidates, it's probably best not to tweet your political views, especially if they're on the fringes. Which is one of the best ways I think I can say about some of them.
That's a very nice, very nice way to put it, I will say.
Yeah, don't do that. And I personally have had said things on Twitter that I'm not exactly thrilled that I did. Not because I don't believe them, but at the same time, it just became much more of a problem for me to deal with than just to keep my mouth shut. Nothing I have said I believe approaches what Chipper said. So it's It's a tough thing in a world where, there's so much information available and that, a candidacy can be derailed so quickly. But at the same time, as a public figure, it's something that you have to manage, and you can offend people. And, there are plenty of media personalities just in the state of Georgia. I can assure you I dealt with a couple of them this past week that get their feelings hurt very, very easily. And, when you do something particularly extreme, even the most reasonable people might go, is it time for us to take a stand against whatever? It's kind of a weird thing, because I want to be talking about Chipper's career, not necessarily talking about what he tweets about. Because I'm not even sure if I follow him on Twitter anymore.
I don't.
I don't
really follow many players anyway. But yeah, the stuff is bad. There's no way around it. All the things, and you can Google it. I'm not going to read them off to you. But it's not good from Chipper. I will say this: the precedent for the Baseball Hall of Fame is such where Chipper's tweet should not keep him out of the Baseball Hall of Fame. There are people that are documentedly terrible people that are in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Confirmed.
It's not arguably
the best hitter to play baseball Ty Cobb, look up that guy and what kind of awful human being he was, right. And no one would argue about it. I mean, and look, Chimper's – I'm not arguing for Chimper to get in or not get in at all regarding any of this, because by the numbers and by his career, he's a Hall of Famer, and I frankly think this discussion is a little silly, and I think he'll end up getting in with like probably, I don't know, over 80%, I would imagine. Beyond that, I have no way of projecting how any of this stuff happens anymore. There's too many other factors to go into it.
For sure. And I do think like it's, I had the same conversation once actually about Baker Mayfield and Heisman Trophy last week, is that people suddenly wanted to make it into a character award after a few guys in the last several years don't have the greatest character references. So for me, I'm always going to deal with on field more than anything, especially when you had that precedent from the Baseball Hall of Fame. And again, I am not defending Chipper's tweets because they're bad. But he's, you know, Chipper's a no doubt Hall of Famer. It's not particularly close, to be honest with you. Like, and even the thing is, Chipper is so good. And this is kind of, you can sort of believe in this or not, but Chipper's candidacy is so good that he can afford to have people not vote for him for character reasons and still get in. Like there are some guys, you know, if Andrew had this kind of character stuff, and Andrew has a couple of little hiccups on his resume as well. There's other people that have candidacies that couldn't survive this. I think Chipper is going to get in. And
let's be real for a second on this Andrew Hall of Fame campaign of yours. This is just to get more royalties from that the Andrew Jones documentary you did, right?
Those $0 royalties really come in hard. It's my one television appearance, but.
But my daughter actually saw you on we were at a Braves game that was being rain delayed, and it was being showed on the little TV monitors, and I pointed at him like, "That's Brad. I write with him."
That is, it's very funny because. The reason they found me was because I wrote about Andrew in a glowing way, and they said, "Hey, talk about that on the show that we're doing." And I said, "Okay." So it wasn't like, I mean, I still don't know how I got to be on there, and there are a couple times where it cuts from like Tom Glavine to me and then to John Smoltz, and it's like, why am I on this broadcast? Does anyone know I'm on this broadcast? Even Bowman and Terrence Moore are the other writers that are on it, and Terrence Moore was an AJC columnist for a long time. Bowman is Bowman, and it's like, hey, who's that other guy in the checkered shirt? Who is that guy? I appreciate those guys having me on. But yeah.
Thank you. Please have me back.
I do like Andrew Jones' candidacy quite a bit, so I'll be this year I'm not going to do the whole rant because I know he's not going to get in. There's a 0% chance he gets in this year. Down the line, if we're doing this in 5 years, Eric, you'll be hearing me like weeping into the microphone about how Andrew should be a Hall of Famer, so just prepare for that.
All right, I'm going to mark this down. I've got it, buddy.
Get ready to do it. I think we've probably done enough on this fine Sunday evening, unless you have something else you want to talk about, because I'm kind of out of things. Because, I mean, we could litigate the investigation until the end of time, but I kind of just want to move on. I know we had to talk about it once, but that'll probably be it for me, unless something else happens.
I mean, that's pretty much it for me, beyond the fact that, you know, Major League Baseball could still fire or not hit people that are in the international operations market for the Braves. That was mentioned in their release. We still don't know exactly who those people are going to be. I would imagine that they're going to give a log look at a guy like Chad McDonald, who seemed to be heavily involved in the Bay signing, for example.
And what was that? The absolute no comment from the Braves afterwards? The "we will not be discussing this any further" was the last line. I was like, oh, that's interesting. I'm not sure said that, but okay.
You know, they want it to be done with, and you don't necessarily get your wish in these things, but you know, they're at least going to get their feelings about it out there. Winter meetings are coming up.
Yes,
they're right on us. So, you know, actual baseball talk and trades. And then now that we know what the punishments are, we know who the Braves are going to keep and not keep. And after the winter meetings, it's going to be prospect list time for us. So,
a little bit diminished this time around because less options to talk about. But honestly, I mean, okay, real quickly, in your mind, before we get out of here, I know that I'm putting you on the spot here. You know, your list is usually at top. Is it 25 or 30? I can't remember.
We went to a 30 this year.
30. Okay, that's what I thought. How many guys would have been in the top 30 for sure that the Braves were losing? My top
for sure. For sure, 3 to 4.
3 or 4. Okay, so it's not like it's going to decimate the top 30, but no. It will have an effect.
No, but I mean, like, and it's probably going to be like one top 10 guy, and then some guys towards some guys in that 20 to 30 range. That's not like a guarantee because we do a.
Oh,
we
it's going to change, but yeah.
Yeah, and we do a vote too, so and
it's
there's
not just you.
even amongst us, there's disagreement as to kind of how high our guys are going to be and how those votes will turn out. But I would say 3 to 4 guys.
I just think it's more context for people that don't necessarily like, sort of understand the gravity. But, you know, three or four of the top 30 prospects in arguably what was the best system in baseball, that's a lot of people. That's a lot of guys. So it's basically like making a – in short, that's basically what you would have paid for like a pretty darn good baseball player and a would have qualified as a blockbuster trade, except you don't get any return.
Oh, yeah. And actually our own Ivan the Ivan the Great messaged
Terrible?
Me. Ivan the Great. He messaged me and he did a breakdown of kind of the overall expected loss in dollar amounts from all the punishments.
Oh, I bet it's a lot.
First of all, it's a great piece and I sincerely hope he posts it soon. And secondly, it is awful to see those types of numbers.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. My first thought was like, not that the Braves were going to be trading 13 prospects, but if you just pick the top, you know, 3, 4, 5 of these guys and like put them in a trade package, what you could have commanded, and it would have been like a real thing. Like they could have gotten quite a bit from that.
It would have been a real thing. Yeah.
That's the simplest way to think about it. Like if you're trying to figure it out in terms of just, you know, who are these guys? You know, if you're not a prospect guy. Like, just think about this. If you suddenly traded 3 or 4 of the Braves' top 30 prospects, including one of their top, you know, 7, 8, 9, you would have gotten a lot back. Let's just say that.
Correct. And one last thing. Ivan and I are also working on an article projecting Ronald Acuna's 2017 season, making some assumptions, of course. Using some, you know, the Ivan math, and then me just kind of chipping in and trying not to get in his way, and hopefully this will kind of spur him to kind of help. We can maybe get that out this week as well, so at least we can talk about something else other than all this.
Beautiful, and check that out for sure. Also, a good friend of the program / website, Dan Zaborski from ESPN, basically did one huge eyeball emoji when he talked about Acuna's zips projection. Apparently, it's going to be off the charts.
And I've talked to Zim a little bit about this very article, so we're going to be quoting him a little bit in there. And
keep an eye on that; it's coming.
Yes, yeah, it's going to be a fun piece to be sure. And people love definitely read Acuna. Definitely read Ivan's piece, the one just about the overall financial effect, because I read it and it was eye-opening to be sure. And also, everything Ivan reads is amazing. So just immediately read it if it has him in the byline.
Yeah, Ivan's the best. Shouts to Ivan, who hopefully will listen to this. I don't know. But yeah, shouts to Ivan for sure. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate you coming on as always, even if it was 5 days late for everybody and it's very late, so I'm gonna let you get out of here. But I appreciate your ministry as always.
I gotta keep Scott at bay with the total number of guest appearances. I don't think there's any risk. Well, I mean, it's going to take a long time to catch up with Carlos, but, you know.
It's really not. You guys are almost there. Like, I think people forget about how long Carlos has been gone. But I almost had I think I might have Carlos on because Baseball America did a lot of great work, and they seem to love him. They are really pubbing my man, Carlos.
He's great.
He is.
He was great for us. He's covering the hell out of the draft. You know what I mean? He does everything the way you're supposed to. He's just a good guy, TC alum. Love Carlos to death. I wish I talked to him more. I kind of sometimes I find myself, I'm like, wow, it's been 2 months since I said hi to that guy. So, but just a great dude. He's doing a lot of great work over Baseball America and just Baseball America in general. Ben Badler, JJ Cooper, all those guys really, really covered this exceedingly well.
Yeah, they killed him in a big way. So, shouts to those guys as well. All right, man. Well, thank you. For everybody else, we'll be back next week unless nothing happens. But I'm sure if something will happen, even then. I will generally be here every week, even if nothing happens, and we'll just make up things to talk about. But I have a feeling stuff will be coming out of the pipe pretty soon. If not by the winter meetings, there'll definitely be something happening out of that. So check us out, as always, on the site. Check out Eric's work. Follow Eric on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at Talking Chop. Follow the site on Facebook as well. Do all that fun stuff. We'll see you guys in a few days.
Bye.
first thing in the morning, as soon as you wake up, the to-do list starts.
Does the car need gas? Hopefully those leftovers are still good. Why did I get CC'd on
Home Mom?
No.
You can't escape the to-do list, but you can make the most of your me time with a relaxing shower using Method hair care products. Try Pure Peace Volumizing, Simply Nourish Moisturizing, or Daily Zen Shampoo and Conditioner for daily use. All formulated with long-lasting fragrances and are safe for color-treated hair. Reconnect with the best version of yourself. Visit methodproducts.com to unleash your inner shower.